So quick thing for you all. Do you prefer mic? No mic. Mic? No mic. Mic? Okay. I'm going to stand right here then. So hello, everyone. Welcome. My name is Marissa Gutierrez-Vicario. I live in New York City. I consider myself a New Yorker finally after 10 years, 7 years. So. I'm so grateful that you're here and welcome to the space. Just to be certain, again, not one more Khalif Browder white privilege and racial justice. Thank you for being here. I guess I want to start out with all of you and just take a moment and just think to yourself. My question to you is, what would a world look like with true racial justice? Okay? So I want you to sit with that in your head, like just for a minute, and think about that. And as people feel comfortable, would anyone care to share just a few words of what that world would look like? And you can just spout it out. Yes, please. Common language.
Yeah.
Okay.
As you speak, I would understand you. As I speak, they would understand me.
Mm-hmm. Cool. No, thank you. So, like, understanding common language. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else want to share their own? Yes.
Star Trek, the Next Generation.
So looking like centuries from now, but hopefully now instead of like cool. Does anyone, do you want to share a little bit what that means? Like,
well,
so
no,
people don't.
It's a TV show. It's you guys know
what? Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm glad.
Thank
you. One more person want to share? Just different, and what way would you say different?
Well, because it's so predominantly black, and for racial justice issues,
to reflect our national.
Yeah, we close the door. So, percentages in the population.
Thank you for sharing more. Thank you. So I'm gonna take a moment, and I hopefully you'll keep the idea of what racial justice means to you in your head. I want to start off with that, and I will explain a little bit why I started with that idea of a new world, a different world that we have now. And in the work, I will bring up art, because for me, art is very important in envisioning that world that we don't yet have but can have, and the possibility of that. So just hold on with me. So when I think of racial justice, this is one. Has anyone ever heard of the organization Race Forward? So Race Forward is an Oakland-based organization. They're considered a racial justice innovation laboratory. And this is what they say. Racial justice is the systematic fair treatment of people of all races that results in equitable opportunities and outcomes for everyone. Okay? This is just one definition, this is their definition. This is one of the frameworks I'll be using today, but it doesn't necessarily, you can build and think about your own, but this is one particular framework. So keep that in mind. Also, with Race Forward, and many of you, I think part of being here today, part of being a part of the General Assembly, is thinking about these questions of racism. So some of you may be familiar with this, but I wanted to start with this context. Looking at four different types of racism. One is internalized, so on the personal level. Interpersonal, so between one or like two people or more. Institutional, so again, at an institutional level, and structural. So when I say structural, I mean shifting between multiple institutions. So I'm starting with this context just to give you a sense. Great. Does anyone have any questions about this framework before I move on? Okay. I'm here too because I represent an organization called Art and Resistance Through Education. And we're based in New York City, and we're looking at amplifying young people's voices through the arts for human rights change. So when I'm saying that, we are a human rights organization, so our framework is based on human rights. But the thing is, understanding that in order to promote human rights and social justice, we're also looking at how the arts and creativity and imagination can transform that. So one of my favorite quotes is by Shada Shakur. We do not have the right in the name of social justice to bore people to death. I love this quote. Because it's real, and it's real. Like we build movements, and we make change, and we make it because we want to make it irresistible to folks. I mean, what, besides the social change aspect of it. So this is one way. There's many ways to build movements, but for Arte, Art and Resistance Through Education, art and creativity, this is kind of a way of changing the world. So I'm going to give a little background to Arte, and then we'll talk more about the subject matter. So we've been around for 3 years, and we are based in New York City, but we work in different communities. We've also worked internationally. And in all of our projects, young people will think about the issues that directly affect them. So that could be, for this particular piece, this is a piece focusing on racial discrimination and sexual harassment. So the young people themselves and the communities that they live in, they're like every day, many of the women of color that I work with were like, we're constantly being sexually harassed on the streets. We're constantly experiencing racial discrimination. So the idea is that they will come together to create a mural, a piece of art, of explaining the community issue. And then we also think about ways that we can use art to change people, and then therefore people can change the world. So I'm just going through some of our mural projects. This one in particular was focusing on children trafficking and child labor. This other one, we also work many a times with undocumented immigrant youth, and the idea that they can use art in order to share their experience of what it's like. There's a story that really resonates with me with a young student who told, we were painting together, and she's like, I remember. And I was like, well, what do you remember? And she's like, I remember crossing the border and having, in the middle of the night, I remember the last phone call that I made with my father. And she says these things to me, and through art, that was the way of opening up, her sharing her story. So again, we use the art to transform our communities and people's minds and hearts, but also for young people, especially young people who experience direct human rights violations, for them to share their story and their truth. This is another piece that was done in East Harlem, focusing on also on racial discrimination and the idea of using butterflies in order to show and capture the idea that immigration is beautiful. I'll leave it for the last slide for our organization background. We worked with students in the classroom in Queens, focusing on solitary confinement. And I don't know if some of you know, but right now in New York State, there's a campaign to raise the age so that young people will be tried for 18 as an adult as opposed to 16 in the state. So a lot of students were really interested in mass incarceration, also and young people who had been incarcerated in the state and also across the country. So they put together a solitary confinement, like the exact dimension of one in the school. So when people could pass by, they would ask, like, what is this, and bring attention to it. So we do murals, but also we also do creative art projects that expand upon human rights abuses that directly affect communities, but also nationally and globally. So we also work on Rikers Island. Who here is familiar with Rikers Island? Okay, good. And unfortunately, I'm glad you do, but unfortunately. So as you know, there's a massive campaign right now to close it. And I would say, I hope it's before 10 years. I'm hearing that number. But we're really grateful to people for the Close Rikers campaign who are trying to close it down or have made that commitment to close it down. We teach there. We haven't done a mural on Rikers Island, but we work with young men and women to explore the rights violations in their own communities. It's even bringing human rights, the idea of human rights, to a place like Rikers, which human rights are constantly being violated every single day. That in itself is something even though we're not making a mural, it feels big, and it feels big. It's the first time that a lot of young people have felt like the people want to hear their story, their voices. It's the first time that they get to actually talk about like the structural racism that or the institutional racism. So with Rikers, there's more than 60,000 New Yorkers cycle through the Rikers each year. Nearly 80% of those detained at Rikers are awaiting trial. They haven't been convicted, and the majority can't afford bail. So that is a truth. And I've met many young, especially young men who have been at Rikers for like over a year. And that Rikers is not supposed to be like a long-term holding place. It's supposed to be a very temporary place. So, and 89% of those held at Rikers are Black or Latino. And that's kind of the core of why we're here. We're talking about this today, because when I work with young people and I see, I identify as Mexican American, and when I see Black and Latino youth, it breaks my heart each time I step into Rikers. And a lot of times, like, I want to hear their truths of being working with them, and their stories of being discriminated against even before they actually get into Rikers, and being sentenced or before they even get there. It's powerful, and it's also it breaks my heart. So one person, and I think I want to honor his name today, and I put his name in the title intentionally, is Khalif Browder. And some of you might know who he is already. For me, I'm going to play two media clips for folks, but the reason that I'm here today and the reason that we talk about his life in our organization is the fact that his life itself was precious, but he could have easily been any one of my students that I work with on a daily basis. So I feel, and like we cannot, as an organization, my work, we cannot talk about human rights abuses abroad if we're not addressing them directly in our own communities, directly like in our neighborhoods. And when we work with our students and I see that they leave our program for the day, I don't want to have to fear if they're going to come back alive. So I'm going to share his story and with a media clip, so please give me 1 second.
Like millions of others in America, with a love for basketball and professional wrestling, Khalif was a In May of 2010, 16-year-old Khalif Browder was walking home from a party with a friend when he was stopped by police. An officer said a man had accused them of stealing his backpack.
They came out the police car and they searched us, but we didn't have anything on us. So I was thinking the next step was we're free to go. We're just going to walk home.
A high school sophomore, like millions of others in America, with a love for basketball and professional wrestling, Khalif was arrested and charged with robbery.
They set my bail for $3,500. You know, my mom told me she didn't have the money, and it was true. She didn't have the money. $3,500 was a lot for my mom.
He was taken to one of the toughest jails in the country, Rikers Island, where he would spend the next 3 years for a crime he says he didn't commit without ever going to trial.
The only thing on my mind was, I gotta go home. I didn't do this. Now I'm in jail around these grown men, and they're, you know, they're fighting each other, and I don't know. It was like hell on earth. We were beaten. We were beaten, stomped by the correctional officers, hit with weapons. They tackled me in my cell where there wasn't any cameras. They grabbed me up, they put me on the bed, and they were just punching and kicking me. And then they maced me in my eyes, they maced me in my nose and my mouth. I couldn't breathe.
3 years of alleged beatings, gang violence, and over 900 days in solitary confinement, all while he waited for a court date that never came.
It was just, we're not ready for trial. And every single court date, I always had it on my mind, I'm going home this court date. The judge told me if I plead guilty, I would be released from jail that same day. But I didn't do it. You're not gonna make me say I did something just so I could go home. If I gotta stay here 5 more months just to prove that I'm innocent, then so be it. It's just heartbreaking, and it's like, I felt like they were just playing with my life.
In June of 2013, all charges against Khalif were dropped, and he was released from jail. But by then, he'd missed his junior year in high school, his senior year, proms, graduation.
I lost my childhood. I lost my happiness. I don't really tell too much people about this, but it's like, sometimes I talk to myself, and it's like, it's actually embarrassing. Sometimes on the train or the bus, I have a whole conversation with myself for 5 to 10 minutes, and then it's like, you're really crazy. Like, you really talk to yourself. But being in solitary confinement that long without talking to anybody, I feel like that maybe had something to do with it, because that's where those habits started to pick up. You know, deep down, I'm a mess, because it's like, I'm 21, and in the inside, I feel like I'm 40. I always believed in standing up for what I felt was right. And if I would have just been pled guilty, then my story would have never been heard. Nobody would have took the time to listen to me. I'd have been just another criminal.
So I want to spend actually just a moment of silence and to hold his name in this space right now. And again, the reason I do this work is I consider this one of the greatest human rights abuses that in this country. And one other thing is, furthermore, is there are so many other folks like Khalif, and that's why I think a lot of the work that his family's doing, and a lot of the work that the campaign to close Rikers, and the folks that are the Raise the Age campaign, they're doing this work because he was one of many folks. And like I mentioned, any one of my students could have been in this position. And when I share this story with students who we work with, other young people of color, they ask me that, like, all this was because of a backpack. You know, and it's funny because I ask them, like, what do you think is fair? You know, like, and they tell me, it's funny, they're like, well, maybe one day, Rikers, you know? And so I say that because it makes me laugh, because I feel like their sense of justice is so much more fair than what we have right now. So, the other thing I'll say, so you know, it was 2015 that he committed suicide. I think within the year, his mother also passed away. So there's great burden on the family. Does anyone have any questions about this story?
Yeah, this is the kind of thing some of us are working on. This is an idea of something that you and congregations can look at doing in your own areas, your own communities, and that is starting the bail fund. Mm-hmm. And in New York, there's
system that I think you know, we're here today because, you know, I wanted to think about the racial justice and the fact that this young man, young black man, was pulled out, like, literally pulled off the street for a backpack. I'm thinking about why that happened. And I think it goes back to, you know, being at Rikers and talking to young black men and, you know, doing exercises with them and talking about, like, you know, time they've been discriminated against. I mean, that is also something that we can all do and take back and think about, like, well, how does white privilege, white supremacy affect, also lead to this system and the structure of the system? There's so many pieces at play. So I want for folks, and so I'm going to be real honest with you, this is kind of unusual for me to have people just like, look at me. This is actually really weird. And Art Day, which is usually like, you know, more movement. But this is the next thing is more like Art Day. I'm going to actually have you talk to someone next to you. Yeah? and I have a series of questions that I would like you to go. So I like giving people a lot of questions, and then people can choose what they want to do. With a person next to you, and I'll give you a few minutes. There's one. What are some immediate thoughts after having watched the videos? So just your immediate reactions and sharing that with each other. Two, and I can put this back on the screen. On what levels, internalized, interpersonal, institutional, structural, does racial injustice occur in this situation, and how? You know, what are some examples that? Maybe you don't see all four of them, but they are in this. Number three, what human rights violations does the article or the video raise? So, and it's pretty obvious, but you can, I was your partner. In what ways does white privilege play a role? And then other questions you might have that come up. So again, I'm gonna give folks 10 minutes. You may only get with one, and that's totally fine, and I do want folks to think about it in pairs and think about it with more clarity. So can you find someone else to connect with?
Yeah.
Justice system we have.
that, you know, if he has ponied up the money,
and in all of the $3,500?
$3,500 bail.
Yeah.
But he and his family obviously decided that they wanted to, that he was innocent. And he should have had the consideration of an innocent boy. Mm-hmm. It would be obvious, you know, talking about somebody who is under 18.
A child.
And, you know, when the judge said, you know, there are all kinds of signals that, you know, essentially a pay-to-play environment. And that's just wrong.
I'm writing two stories. One of whom I was kid and had it put together and like he had this shirt on and like as to almost a shirt. Oh no, he was one of the good ones. And so even the video was like placating to my personal doesn't make any sense. Like I needed a kid who was like clean, ready to go. And it's frustrating. It's like everybody, but even somewhere deep, because I hear it, right? Like what had happened as a kid, when I was a kid that was skating or whatever, and it didn't happen to me, and then it happened to a kid. The response was from parents and from friends was like, well, that kid did it. There were, the justice system is just, and so like in my head, I still have to fight. My privilege wasn't not necessarily shown, but I felt it the whole time, and I like keep checking it. So.
This is a little bit different, but I think a lot when young black men are killed, and they're like, you found a trace of weed.
I want to go really quickly, just thinking about international instruments and how we address racism too. And the reason we're doing this too is because the reason I started RK and the work that we do with young people is the fact that we all have human rights, but the fact that oftentimes folks, especially young people, aren't aware that they have those rights. So I'm going to ask people, what human rights of racial injustice and discrimination is a human rights issue. And maybe not on in this country, we don't look at it from that way. Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons why that's a whole other workshop, or it's 201. But I think in terms of for today, I just want to briefly go over the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination, Racial Discrimination. And I think I'm seeing more and more in terms of all the racial injustice that's happening in our community, and I'm seeing more cases of parents and folks bringing attention to the international community and using international instruments. For me, I think it's really important because I want young people that we work with to know that this isn't an isolated case, and the discrimination they face is not just something that happens to them, but it is a part of a larger construction of how the world we see, and not only anti-racist, but also like calling out like anti-blackness that affects our countries, but also across the world. I'm Mexican, and you know, I've lived in Mexico for a long time, and I say this, I've had friends who are like, Marissa, is it true that all black folks are criminals? And I'm like, where are you getting this from? And they said, because we see it in the media, and we see it, and it comes, so I think about that a lot, and how ashamed I was when I heard that, and what that meant in terms of how we portray folks of color, and how that is perceived abroad. I'm introducing this, it is an international instrument to eliminate racial discrimination and the promotion of understanding amongst all races. This is controversial, I think, but in terms of like outlawing speech and criminalizing membership in racist organizations. This is a much longer discussion, but I think the takeaway from this is really the fact that The takeaway from this is really that it is an international instrument. There actually is a committee that sees the cases and on racial discrimination abroad. There are 88 signatories, 177 parties. And interestingly enough, again, that committee is composed of experts, and the U.S. is actually currently one of them. So just to keep that in mind. But I think it is important for these instruments to keep the U.S. accountable. And it's interesting, when you look at documents from like Human Rights Watch, and when they do like analysis of human rights in the, like, this is, it comes up so often again and again, and the prison and the racial discrimination. For me, I think, I'll just say this really quickly too, RTA works with a lot of like documents in terms of like how do we teach human rights to young people, so that once you know human rights, they can not only defend the rights of others, but they can defend their own rights. One thing that we don't have yet, for example, is like a version of the CERT. I think it would be amazing to be able to put that in a language that's actually accessible to people. Who here is familiar with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? Good. This is more than I've taught in like Colombia, like and I educating, and like no one knows about it. Like, broke my heart, because I think it's important to talk about these things and realize human rights. So one dream I have is that like ARTE, and this is something that I invite you all to support with, is thinking about how can we take some of the articles from the international convention and actually make it a working document that is accessible to everyone. So I invite you all, sign the sheet if you're interested. So I want to go, part of the workshop too is going back to art and creativity and imagination. And thinking about like how do we creatively talk about these issues, how do we talk about these issues in a way that uses art and public art especially? I'm going to show three slides that are about Khalif's story, but I want to encourage people to think about what are some creative ways that we can talk about racism. So this is a piece that was done by LMNOP and Guilt in New York. And I don't know if you can read this, but it says demand justice in bars and lines, and it is a portrait, and it was in Manhattan. This is another piece in honor of his life, and it says, if you can't see, it says, this happens every day. And it is Khalif Browder. Caleb Nealon and Katie Yamasaki did this piece in honor of his life. And this next one, Ife Konira. This was actually presented at a workshop, conference. There's a Beyond the Bar conference in Colombia every year. So sharing through the art. But if you can read it, it says, I think like, who killed the black boy, like boys, why did black boys die? So you can just see this piece that was in honor of him. These are just some examples of artwork that's been done. But for the next and last part of this conversation with you all, I would love and I want to invite folks to think about like what are creative ways, and back to that quote from Ashada Shakur, like how can we not bore people with it? How can we reach out people's minds and hearts thinking about like transforming the world? Like, I love art because art allows us to transform the world. So I want to just invite you all. I'm trying to think of how I'm going to do this book. Maybe get into groups like a four this time around, and it could be really the same form, it could be someone else. But I really, really want folks to think about what are some ways that we can use art in work, in community spaces, in schools, in order to bring attention to racial injustice and bring attention to white privilege. You know, I don't know if you've seen like, that like bottles like are like a thing of milk that says like got privilege, or the shirts that say got privilege, like the I think that's really creative, and I think it opens up a conversation for this. So I'm gonna invite you all in your groups for like the next few minutes to think about what are some interventions, what are some creative ways that you can talk about this in your community. Does that seem to understand? Okay. Kind of? Mm-hmm. Kind of like
the audience is our community.
Yeah, to be your community. I got a question, like your work, your school, like, I really appreciate, like, for example, you're saying, well, what did you say? Like what would you say to folks in your community? Who's your family? Like, what would you do? And I want to share that because I think that's the important piece, like, we're brainstorming together, and then we can take this out. So, if people actually, I can also pass around paper, and if you want to write something down, you can do that. And if you sign up, I can also commit to sending out some ideas that came up, that I think is important to generate these ideas. Sound good? Okay. So yeah, I'm going to give you 7 minutes. conversations and the limited time that we have left, right? Maybe each group to share one idea of something that they came up with, or even if we didn't come up with an artistic intervention or a public art thing, what did you talk about? One thing.
Well, yeah, we were talking about the idea of like maybe using like theater as a and or art as a way to bring up topics in a less lecture-y way.
I will say this, I don't know if you saw it, I wish I had some of it, but there was a group of Broadway performers came to like, New York, and right in the tourist area of New York City, where folks like, go through, and they actually did a whole like piece on Black Lives Matter, and they performed this beautiful dance. You know, all like Broadway, like, Black Lives Matter, right? Anybody does YouTube it? YouTube it. Next group?
And so
in the stride of a course, or, you know, really just very, like, with a presence that commands respect. And he portrays, you know, young Black people that he's met in these poses. And so he's done them in a lot of different ways, but he uses a lot of big, huge scale and really bright colors, and it's a representation that people, mostly Black, are portrayed. Like, he's done series, like, where he's met people, you know, in Kenya, I think, that is, you know, and he's become pretty popular in American museums. He had a big show at Brooklyn Museum, which then traveled to Fort Worth, which I was able to see, that just rooms full of proud young Black men that you just don't see very often.
And the reason I'm sharing that is like the idea that, like, we actually bring pictures of him into libraries with young Black men, you know, like, that is beautiful, and to be able to see, like, in the polyamory, like, we'll talk about the polyamory, but, like, thinking about what that means to have visual representation in galleries, in museums. So I really appreciate that. I mean, that's, it was kind of astounding that they had never seen that, had interaction with these models in that way before. So I highly recommend looking him up and, like, seeing his artwork, supporting
him up.
Do you all
want to show me the movie? Yeah, so ours was, one of the ones that we liked was using, like, cartoons and comics to kind of put it out there to, like, the youth and the adults, where it's, like, educational, but there's also, like, some humor to it, so, like, it's not just, like, just attacking people and satire, but still, like, you realize, like, oh, yeah, they actually do that, like, in microaggressions and everything.
We talked about space and giving space to display art in our conversation. One of the things we also talked about was, you know, even around our own abilities, is giving the best of words to the space to display. You know, so it's a little more. And you've got to see it in person.
Yeah, pictures are this big, but the paintings are like, yeah, it's half the size of this wall.
And what?
Like the paintings?
Can
be widely. The artist we were talking about.
Yeah. Just really quick. I went to the UU of Richmond, Virginia, and they did something amazing with art. They allow Black artists to use their social as an art gallery. And so the relationship became between the buyer and the seller. The church had nothing to do with it. They just put their artwork there, put their information, their contact information there. And so you get to buy original artwork, and it's, the social wall looks beautiful. I mean, the artwork was amazing. And so we took that. I was the lead character, and we're like, oh, this is something that we can do in our space. And so that's something that everybody,
right,
in their spaces.
That's actually my church, and so we'll rotate between that and then high school artwork and so community and
thank you
so much. Thank you all. In the last few minutes, you may notice that I gave you a blank piece of paper to commit to. And the other thing you might notice, if you look on the back over there, is actually a printout of Corning Browder. And I did like the two reasons. Well, one thing is, it's the art secret I was going to share. So again, I run an arts organization, but I think about it, at the end of the day, for me, art is art. I love art. Art is really important, but it's not about the art. It's about the process of moving towards a more just world, a more equitable, racially, true racial, with justice society. So that's my secret. I'm not supposed to say that running an arts organization, but I think it's important to say. And the other thing I want to say is, like, you know, please, before you leave today, I put a space on the door because it's a reminder that whatever you got from this, hopefully something that
or you can maybe commit to the bail fund, or you can maybe bring art to your community. But I want to leave with that because that's this is everything. This is the reason why we're here. And you're going to love art, but then the people paint the world, not art. So thank you so much. And if you want, actually, you can actually post it on the wall, or you can give it to me, or you can give it to yourself. And then also you can sign it on the friendship. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Here.